helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. One of the things I'm pretty particular about is the meaning of words. I've really grown to enjoy and love the understanding of the actual meanings of words. But what happens when those words lose their meanings? There are those among us who refuse to recognize the definition of the word woman. We have justices of the Supreme Court who complain when their colleagues look to the authors of a law to understand them. And even facts can be labeled as misinformation, well, if they're politically disadvantageous at the time. How long is it before dictionaries literally become useless? The English language is being dissolved right before our eyes, and the consequences of that act is severe indeed. How can the American people communicate when they no longer share a common language? And how can laws be followed and enforced if we cannot agree on what the words mean? How can a culture exist when each person is a law unto themselves? This nihilistic need for the world to conform to our preferences is not only destroying our nation, but our culture and everything that made America the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel. You've joined us here at the Constitution Study. I am so glad that you did, because today we're talking about what happens when words no longer matter, when their meanings have lost all purpose. I'm reminded of a line from the Pixar movie, The Incredibles, where the villain said, "If everyone is special, then no one is." Well, if every word can mean whatever you want, then they mean absolutely nothing at all. Now, I want to start with a dictionary. If you follow the Constitution Study for any length of time, you know that I love and use Webster's 1828 dictionary, the predecessor to today's Merriam-Webster dictionary. Now, why do I use the 1828 dictionary? Well, I use it for two main reasons. Most of the time, I'm looking to understand words as our founding fathers understood them. Now, Noah Webster was a contemporary of the founding fathers. He was actually invited to edit the Federalist Papers, and he had been compiling spellers and other tools for years. So in 1828, he finally released them as a dictionary. And I believe that is the closest understanding to the meaning of the words our framers had. Now, I also use this 1828 dictionary because I'm pretty much losing trust in the modern Merriam-Webster dictionary. Now, some of the definitions have changed over time, and this is absolutely true. But I'm beginning to wonder what value there is in a dictionary that cannot define the word female. Well, it's not that they can't. They've come up with a new definition of female. See, the primary sense of female in the Webster's 1828 dictionary is of, relating to, or being the sex that is typically has a capacity to bear young or produce eggs. But right below that, they have having a gender identity that is opposite of male. Notice, they didn't say having a gender that's having a gender identity. So according to Merriam-Webster, if you are a dude, if you have XY chromosomes in your genetic code, if you have male genitalia, if you have more testosterone in your body, you can be a female if you simply say you're a female. And magically, that doesn't matter anymore. They've taken sex and turned it into this idea of gender identity. And it makes me wonder, how can I trust anything Merriam-Webster is saying anymore? See, they even put gender identity above other senses of definition. So A, I mentioned before, is related to the sex, typically with the capacity to bear young or produce eggs. B is a gender identity. C, made up usually adult members of the female sex. Okay, that's kind of strange because I was taught you never define a word with the word. Then D, which is characteristics of girls, women, or the female sex. Same problem. Designed for or typically used of girls or women, engaged in or exercised by girls or women, having a quality such as small size or delicacy of sound sometimes associated with the female sex. See, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, what you think is actually a greater sense than what you are. See, if you are a female, meaning you are you can bear young. Generally, as a group, you can bear young. You produce eggs. But they think your identity is more important than the fact that you may be made up of an adult female or have characteristics of girls or women. See, when the dictionaries stop following logic and reason, words start to stop having meaning. If now a 6'4" NFL linebacker can simply say, "Hey, today I feel like a woman, therefore I am female," the word female means nothing anymore. Now, this has been running rampant lately, not only in the media, but in society as a whole. This idea that what we think is going to make the world around us change. Suddenly, because you think you're a female, you are a female, and you must be treated as a female. And we'll just ignore logic, reason, facts, evidence. We'll just throw it out the window. And the consequences of this are grave indeed. Well, for example, there's been recent guidance. Now, what's a guidance? Think of the Dear Colleague letter. It's not a law. It's not a rule. It's not a regulation. It's basically a veiled threat. You know, this is what we want. If you don't do it, well, we'll come and get you. And this was coming out of the Department of Education and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Again, two agencies that do not legally exist because the laws that create them are repugnant to the Constitution, therefore invalid and void. But they've decided that they're going to simply reinterpret the law. See, they're taking laws prohibiting discrimination based on sex in both schools and workplaces, and now extending that to the idea of transgender mental disease. See, they're saying when Congress wrote a law that said you shall not discriminate on the basis of sex, sex is a biological fact, and with extremely rare exceptions, it's either male or female. It is assigned when the sperm meets the egg. It is literally designated at conception. No. The Department of Education and the EEOC said, we're not going to bother with that. We're going to let you make it up as you go along. Now, if you think this has no consequences, I want to disabuse you of that situation. I want to get to that in just a minute, because if you read the actual law, you'll find nothing that supports that view. They were very specific. Discrimination based on sex. Now, again, why is this important? Well, Congress has declined to attempt to pass any legislation to prohibit discrimination based on sexual identity or perceived gender. Meaning the law says discrimination based on sex, but if the federal agencies, if executive agencies can simply rewrite the meaning of sex to be whatever they want, well, then the word sex means nothing anymore. I mean, just imagine, you go into an emergency room, and the doctor, the nurse, intake nurse is asking you questions, you know, what's your name, what's your sex, and you say, well, I don't know, let's say I'm a female. And they put down female. And the doctor starts diagnosing you and says, this is really weird because your hormones are all off. And I think there's a problem here. I think you might actually have prostate cancer, but if you're a female, you can't have prostate. You see the logical consequences of this insanity? Or imagine you're walking down the street and you get mugged. And you say, yes, it was a middle-aged black man that mugged me. And you give a description. And the police, well, they find somebody that matches the description. So he goes, no, I'm actually an Asian female. I know my skin is black, and I know I have male looks and male genitalia, but I identify as an Asian female. Therefore, that was an invalid stop because I didn't meet the criteria that you were given. I even seen a report that there are groups that are trying to push anthropologists to prevent them from identifying human remains as male or female. Now, this one I find really interesting because if the whole idea behind the transgender movement is how you feel, skeletons don't care. If you see human remains, they're either male or female. But what happens when we stop? I've talked before about the destruction of the English language. Again, if you come to me and says, who do I talk to about that about something? And I say, well, it's that man in the corner. Only all you see are people with long hair, large breasts, wide hips. You go, the what? The man over there. Well, who said that? They said that. Who? They. Well, there's only one person there. Well, that's a they. Or a Z. The English language breaks down and we can no longer communicate. Because when I say male and you think, well, that could be female, we can no longer communicate. And if we cannot communicate rationally, what happens to society as a whole? Now, interestingly enough, going back to the Department of Education, EEOC, a U.S. district judge decided to put an end to some of those shenanigans. For example, if you go back to the 2019 case, Bostock versus Clayton County, the Supreme Court held that Title VII, the federal law forbidding sex discrimination in employment, prohibits employers from firing employees based on their homosexuality or transgender status. In other words, they decided that sex meant more than sex. It meant how you lived your life, how you expressed yourself. And while I can see some logic to the thoughts, the standards they put behind it, the problem is they decided the law no longer meant what it said. Rather than having Congress fix the law, they simply decided to reinterpret it to, in effect, write law all on their own. Now, Neil Gorsuch wrote for the majority to try and to limit this. He says, the employers worry that our decision will sweep beyond Title VII to other federal and state laws that prohibit sex discrimination. And under Title VII itself, they say sex-segregated bathrooms, locker rooms, and dress code will prove unsustainable after our decision day. But none of these laws, other laws, are before us. We have not had the benefit of adversarial testing about the meaning of their terms, and we do not prejudge any such question today. Well, Mr. Gorsuch, there was a law before you, Title VII, a law that specifically prohibited discrimination based on sex, and you decided to reinterpret it. So why would the employers not be surprised that maybe this will change? So absolutely nobody should have been surprised when President Biden, back in January of 2021, basically his first day as president, simply declared via executive order that laws that prohibit sex discrimination prohibit discrimination based on gender identity or sexual orientation. In other words, he basically took the language of Bostock and said, yep, this is now going to apply, and we're simply going to reinterpret the law. We're not going to write the law. We're not going to fix the law. We're simply going to reuse the words, reinterpret the words to get the outcome that we want. Because the ends, apparently, in their minds, justify the means. Now, you remember that federal guidance I was talking about before? Well, there's several attorneys general sued in federal court. It was led by the state of Tennessee. It was joined by Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Dakota, South Carolina, and West Virginia. All of them filed suit. They said, this is crazy. They challenged the guidance by the DOE and the EEOC that required schools that receive federal money, problem number one, to let men compete in women's sports. And this judge has issued a temporary injunction. District Judge Charles Atchley has granted a temporary injunction against the federal guidance, meaning it cannot be put in place, it should not be put in place until the court comes up to its final decision. But in the fact that every silver lining must have a cloud, the suit didn't say that, listen, it is wrong to reinterpret the language. No, no, no. The suit merely said that the Department of Education, EEOC, did not follow the Administrative Procedures Act when they rewrote the law. So even when we see something that comes out right, we're still looking at the wrong problem. The problem, yes, there's a problem that they didn't follow the Administrative Procedures Act, but the real problem is they are rewriting federal law in violation of the actual language of the statute. But apparently that isn't what was challenged. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, I have an incredible offer I want to show you. See, for the entire month of July, in celebration of our nation's independence, all of my listeners, both new and repeat, can get 50% off Immune Super Boost from Healthy Cell. That's right, every one of you. All you have to do is go to healthycell.com/outloud and use the code America50. That's America50. The Immune Super Boost is a great supplement designed to boost your immune system. I use it, especially when I travel. My family uses it. It helps boost the immune system to fight off whatever bugs are floating around, be it everything from coronavirus to the flu to the common cold. Now, I'm not saying you won't get sick, but it certainly is a great way to boost that immune system. And if you can get 50% off, that's an even better deal. So again, go to healthycell.com/outloud. Use that code America50. And you'll get 50% off the Immune Super Boost in that order.
Many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Spreading the OUTLOUD truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about the meaning of words. And again, if you followed me for any length of time, you know how much stock I put in the meaning of words. The fact that America is a republic, not a democracy. The fact that all legislative power is vested in a Congress, not in the executive branch. That when the Constitution says something shall not be abridged or shall not be abridged, it means it shan't. You can't do it. It's wrong. It's illegal. It shall not happen. If those words have been losing their meanings for decades. Sure, we saw a lot in the courts where, well, shall not be infringed meant shall not be infringed unless the government has a compelling interest in doing so. Now, this idea of misusing words, intentionally misusing words, can have some pretty serious consequences. You've probably seen reports of men in women's locker rooms, men in women's bathrooms, girls who are afraid to go to the bathroom because there are men in there. And I'm not talking about men that have transitioned, where they have physically altered their bodies to look like a woman. I'm talking about men with male genitalia showering with women. And the women are upset. Or you've seen the men competing in women's sports where they have a natural physical advantage. Just think Leah Thompson. Here's a guy. Middle-of-the-road swimmer in the male sport, suddenly decides he's a woman, does not transition, but not only has been sweeping the tournaments, sweeping the events, the NCAA named him Woman of the Year. And yes, I did not, I said that correctly. The NCAA named him the Woman Sports Athlete of the Year. If that isn't enough to make your head explode, I don't know what is. Just think of the young ladies, the girls who have spent most of their lives practicing and training to compete in a sport. Many of them at the top of their game, only to lose to a boy because he said he's a girl. And somehow this is considered fair. I tend not to use that word fair because it often gets misinterpreted, but how about just? We have a law that says if you have, again, Title IX, if you have a male sport, you must offer a female sport. You must offer a female-only sport. But now we have men competing in the female-only sports, denying women their chance at not only wins and accolades, but scholarships. Potential business opportunities that these women have been denied because a man decided he said he was a woman and took all of his physical advantages and used it to, in the swimming, simply beat the girls. In wrestling, girls have been getting injured because they're competing against boys. This is a dangerous situation. And we're told that if we don't recognize the absolute idiocy and lunacy of this position, we're referred to as transphobic, which, again, is another oxymoron, because I'm not afraid of a dude in a dress. I'm not afraid of a guy who thinks he's a girl. But I am afraid for the people that this person is injuring. Probably one of the worst examples are where a man sued, I forget what this was, I remember reading, a man sued to be housed in a abused women's shelter. That's right. A guy claiming to be a woman demanded to be housed in a woman's abused woman's shelter. Because this one man who's confused, I'll grant him that he's not being malicious. He's just confused. He has a mental disorder. He is disconnected from reality. But to make him feel better, we're going to put him in a room of women who have been abused by men. And this is considered the feminist position? To me, this is crazy. But this is the state of affairs in America today. This is how many of our governments are operating. And by the way, it's not just women's shelter. Apparently in New Jersey, If you're a guy claiming to be a girl, they will put you in a women's prison. You see, Demetrius Minor decided to transition after he's put in prison. Now, he's serving a 30-year sentence for aggravated manslaughter and carjacking after stabbing his former foster father to death. Now, apparently, at some point, he was moved to the Edna Mahan Correctional Facility for Women during this transition. Now, not terribly surprisingly, Mr. Demetrius, now wanting to call himself Ms. Demetrius, was found having sexual relations with some of the female inmates. In fact, he got two of them pregnant. Now, New Jersey Department of Corrections say they cannot comment on it at this time, but those are what we used to call the birds and the bees. And in fact, I believe it was one of the reasons why we have sex-segregated prisons was to avoid this type of thing. Besides the fact that, now I have no personal experience with this, but I imagine privacy is truly an issue in prisons. But you see what happens when we throw out logic, reason, facts, and data, and we simply react to people's emotions? And now consider the quite reasonable concern of other people, including other women, in other settings revolving around government installations. Like I said, schools. Imagine a young girl, somebody who's already dealing with body image issues, being told that she must shower with a male, or that she must use the same restroom as a male, because he feels like it, because of his mental issue. See, call it what you want, transgenderism is a mental disease. The facts, the reality, the evidence is that you are one sex or the other, and the fact that you feel that way, feel different, doesn't change the reality. I know of no other situation where a person's feelings trumps medical reality when it comes to treatment. But again, if we've lost the English language, if male and female don't mean anything anymore, if laws that say you cannot discriminate based on sex don't mean anything anymore because we'll just redefine sex to whatever it is we want today, how do we survive? And I guess another question is, where does it end? I've already used the example of someone claiming they're a different skin color or ethnicity. Where does it end? Because if the word sex doesn't mean anything anymore, what happens when the word race doesn't mean anything anymore? What happens when the word human doesn't mean anything anymore? We've already had people claiming that certain animals deserve human rights. Is that really that far-fetched nowadays? We have rampant examples of trying to erase our history by getting rid of monuments, by denying certain things happened, by rewriting history. The 1619 Project is literally a rewriting of history. But how can we communicate our history? How can we learn from our past if we can't use our past, if we can't use the words of our past? How many people have been canceled because they quoted somebody with a word that somebody didn't like? Was it Joe Rogan? He was accused of being racist because he quoted someone who used a word that's not used in polite society anymore. So I'm not saying words don't change over time. I'm not saying their meanings don't change over time. I remember when gay meant happy. That's my favorite example. But what happens, the problem we have is, while the term gay morphed over years, if not decades, from meaning happy to meaning a male homosexual, that's something society did, and we all did at once. The problem we're dealing with in today's society, especially in the transgender society, is a small group of people are telling everyone else how to redefine words. They are punishing people for not using words the way they want them to. Now, I spent a lot of time today talking about the transgender movement and its attempt to destroy the English language to make people feel better in their misery, or at least feel better in their delusions. But it's not simply there. I want to take a look at a couple of other words that have been being redefined lately. And I want to start with this word disinformation. Actually, there's two words, disinformation and misinformation. Now, misinformation is basically providing incorrect information, whereas disinformation is doing so with malicious intent. It's intentionally misleading to do harm. So the only difference between the words is the intent. Are you making an honest mistake, or are you intentionally trying to mislead and harm people? Now, these words have been bandied about, well, especially the last couple of years, they've been rampant. How many times were we told that the Hunter Biden laptop story was misinformation, only to find out it was true? Or that President Trump colluded with the Russians, only to find out that that wasn't true? But misinformation and disinformation have morphed. See, originally, these terms dealt with facts and data. If I told you that 2 plus 2 is 5, and I just didn't do the math right, well, that would be disinformation. I was giving you incorrect information, but I was not trying to be intentionally malicious. If I were to tell you that 2 plus 2 equals 5 because I say it's equal 5, and if you don't agree with me, you're going to get in trouble, that's misinformation. And that is exactly what the federal government has been doing, and a lot of its agencies, and a lot of its ancillaries. See, I've noticed something, the ideas come to mind, and I don't want to get too far off track, but I'm beginning to understand why the media and the Democratic Party and the progressives all seem to be singing from the same hymnal. I'm not talking about a conspiracy theory. I'm just talking about a viewpoint of the world. But you notice how often disinformation and misinformation is being redefined as what goes against the current progressive ideology. See, just a few years ago, if you identified a crossdresser as a crossdresser, as a man wearing women's clothes or woman wearing man's clothes, that was not considered disinformation. Now, if I look at that same person, a transgender person, and say, that man is actually a woman or vice versa, I'm plainly providing disinformation. I'm actually charged with malicious intent and misgendering someone. Yes, I'm still dealing with some of the transgender idea, but it's now these terms are being used to attack reality itself. Not just the words, not just the meaning of the words, but reality itself. And the long-term consequences, to me, again, are quite damaging. But notice that whether it was the homosexual movement, the transgender movement, the critical race theory movement, the defund the police movement, they all have two things in common. One, they are promoted by the progressive groups. I want to call them the Progressive Party, but that tends to mislead. I'm not talking about a political party. I'm talking about party. Think of the Soviet Union or 1984, where the party was the ruling body. So they've all been supported by this progressive movement, and they've all worked by changing the language in an attempt to criminalize, to destroy anyone who holds to a reasonable, logical, fact-based point of view. So when Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas let slip that they were forming a disinformation governance board, people went apoplectic because the word disinformation doesn't sound good. But that's just a board. The fact is, there have been movements towards this disinformation, the intentional misusing of information for malicious intent, for years. It's just that lately it's been coming out of the woodwork more. Where originally it was an idea that was kept mostly in academia and then eventually made its way out through the media and changed the attitudes of people. Now it's front and center. Now it's the White House saying this information cannot be allowed. It's social media saying we won't allow this information on our platform. It's the use of this word disinformation and misinformation to shut down debate because we cannot have a challenge to our opinion, to our feelings, to the way we want the world to work. And while I've been talking a lot about moves from the progressive spectrum, the progressive movement and their cohorts, they're not the only ones. Many people misuse words. Now, again, sometimes it's misinformation, sometimes it's actual disinformation. But we often misuse words to get the outcome that we want. But I'm going to have to hold that until after the break. But before we go out, I want to remind you, I've made some updates to the Blessings of Liberty tour page. We've got some new dates, some new venues. I am still looking for locations. I'm still looking for opportunities to go out and meet and greet people. So you can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/tour. You can find out where I'll be speaking. You can invite me to come speak to your group or to your event. Now, also, if you like this type of information, well, be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the news. See, it's more important than everything than ever that we do our parts to share. Share this information, the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos. Share the truth to combat the lie. Unlike the progressives, we don't deal with bad information by shutting it up. We combat bad information with good information. And by doing so, you can help secure the blessings of liberty to yourself and to the rest of America.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach, write, and generate to be free. And it's important to understand words. This is what we're talking about today, is what happens when words start losing their meaning. Now, I hinted before I went off to break that there was a couple of words that, let's say, are less on the progressive side that often get used. And I want to make sure we understand what we're talking about. And those words are invasion and treason. Now, again, I'm going back to Webster's 1828 dictionary because I trust it a lot more. And I want to talk about these two words because, these, again, I often hear them bandied about. And they're usually, in my experience, used to generate emotion to get people to join a cause. And the first of those words, again, is invasion, which Noah Webster defines as a hostile entrance into the possession of another, particularly the entrance of a hostile army into a country for the purpose of conquest or plunder, or the attack of a military force. Now, I hear people talk a lot about invasion when it comes to the southern border. They say, oh, it's an invasion, and, you know, if you don't consider it an invasion, well, I guess you're not an American or something like that. But is it truly an invasion? And why is that invasion language so important? Well, let's start with that latter question. Why is the invasion language so important? Well, under Article 1, Section 8, Clause, I believe it is 14 of the U.S. Constitution, Congress has the power to provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union and to suppress and repel invasion. But probably more important is Article 4, Section 4, which says the United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. See, if you can declare the migration, the illegal alien crisis as an invasion, well then, you know, Article 4, Section 4, the federal government has to protect us from it. But again, is it truly an invasion? Is it the hostile entrance into the possession of another? Now, I'm not saying there aren't people that are coming across the border with hostile intent. There are. But is that the intent of the vast majority of the people that are coming across? Because it certainly isn't a hostile army entering the country. They certainly aren't here for conquest or plunder. Again, there are individuals, there are groups that are taking advantage of this. But understand, what's happening at the border is not an invasion, at least not by the legal definition of the word or the original definition of the word when the Article 4, Section 4 was written. But even this comes about from the rewriting of the English language. You see, if someone comes into this country illegally, they're not a migrant, they're not an immigrant, they're an illegal alien. That's the legal terms. But again, we reuse words and you repeat them often enough and we start thinking of these people as, and again, some of them are just looking for a better world. I completely understand that. But if you enter this country illegally, you're an illegal alien. If you are attempting to immigrate here illegally, well, again, you're failed. You're trying to come here permanently illegally. Well, then you're an illegal immigrant. The emphasis on illegal. That doesn't make it an invasion. What it makes it is a misunderstanding of the Constitution and the actual roles of the states and the federal government. But the idea of, well, we'll just call it an invasion because it excites passions. Well, that's doing the exact same thing the progressives are doing. We're going to rewrite the English language to get the outcome that we want. And it's just as destructive to society, to our culture, to our way of life, and to the rule of law when it's done by one side as by the other. So whenever it tells me, you know, oh, the southern border is an invasion, no, it's not. That is hyperbole. That is, you could even say it is disinformation because it is often used with the malicious intent of making something more than it is to get a political outcome. Now, the other word I hear bandied about quite frequently is treason. Now, again, according to Webster's 1828 dictionary, treason in general is the offense of attempting to overthrow the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance or of betraying the state into the hands of a foreign power. Now, that's what the dictionary definition is, but we have a legal definition in the Constitution of the United States. See, Article 3, Section 3, Clause 1 says, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. And I've had a lot of people say, but see, Paul, there it is. You know, so-and-so is giving aid and comfort to China or Iran or North Korea or Cuba or Venezuela. But they have to be an enemy. Now, what is an enemy? Well, again, going back to Webster's 1828, a foe, an adversary. A private enemy is one who hates another and wishes him injury or attempts to do him injury to gratify his own malice or ill will. A public enemy or foe is one who belongs to a nation or party at war with one another. So in order for someone to commit treason in the United States, they must either make war against the United States or give aid and comfort to somebody who is making a nation state that is making war with the United States. Right? That's a very important distinction. So when people say that, whether it be Biden, Trump, Obama, Bush, that they're committing treason against the United States, that's not happening. But again, it's a way to rile passion. It's a way to get people excited and ready to go and energized to go do something. But again, it's just another misuse of a word. And it is often done in an attempt to, again, generate passion, get people to your side of an argument or debate, or to influence somebody to do something by claiming it is treason. What the other person doing is treason. Now, this is why I'm very particular about the use of these words. I don't use words like invasion and treason lightly. And when people make those arguments, when they're asking me questions, I make a point of defining what's actually going on because I want to have a common language. Now, if you're thinking about invasion and you're thinking about treason, well, there's another word that's been bandied about a lot lately, and that is insurrection. Again, Noah Webster defines insurrection as arising against civil or political authority. The open and active opposition of a number of persons to the execution of a law in a city or state. Now, I bring this about for a reason because there's been a lot of talk about insurrection in this election cycle. You have the whole January 6th being labeled as insurrection. You have the attempt with the illegal House Special Committee on January 6th attempting to label President Trump as fomenting insurrection. You even have states that are trying to charge insurrection to candidates so that they cannot run. Because under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president or and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same. You see, if you can charge insurrection against a candidate, presidential, congressional, even state candidate, the 14th Amendment bars them from serving in those offices. But again, insurrection is specific, arising against civil or political authority. So was January 6th an insurrection? Now, I'm not saying there aren't people in that crowd that wish to overturn a legitimate civil or political authority. But remember, Congress is not our ruler. The federal government, their civil and political authority, is limited to the Constitution of the United States. The constitutions of most of our states say that all power is inherent in the people, that we, the Declaration says, we establish governments to protect our rights, and that we determine their just powers by our consent. So for those in January 6th who were protesting the illegal appointment of presidential electors. Now, I've already had one video removed from YouTube for saying this, but I'll say it again here. There were five states, at least five states, where the appointment of electors was, the manner of appointing electors was changed illegally in violation of the Constitution. Now, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So if you're there protesting a usurpation of power, how can that be a rise against the legitimate civil or political authority? It isn't. Now, that's not to say there weren't people in that office, or in that demonstration, that had other ideas. I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about that in general. So when certain politicians claim that then President Trump fomented insurrection in an attempt to disqualify him from office, they're again misusing words. That is misinformation. They are intentionally deceiving people for a malicious end. The same with those in the states who are trying to disqualify certain candidates by saying, well, you attended January 6th, you were there, therefore you were part of an insurrection, therefore you're not qualified to hold office. Same thing. It is why I am so particular about words. Because if words don't mean a specific thing, they mean nothing. If words are mere Play-Doh in our hands to be whatever we want at whatever time we want, the dangers are more than simply we lose the ability to communicate, the ability to have a rational, reasonable conversation. We lose the ability to have laws, because laws are written in words. And those words had a meaning to the people that wrote them, that ratified them, that approved them. And if, as I believe Justice Sotomayor said, it was crazy to actually interpret the 14th Amendment based on the people who wrote it, then it's all Plato. And we no longer are a nation of laws. We are truly a nation of men. And whoever has the loudest voice, the most political influence, the greatest ability to persuade others becomes the ruler. I wonder if this is what Washington had in mind in his farewell address. When he warned us that the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, is its own frightful despotism. Because he went on to say that eventually people will seek security in an individual. And some individual from some prevailing faction, whether by fortune or by skill, elevates themselves on the ruin of public liberty. I look at recent history and say it's not an individual. We've had a series of individuals that have elevated themselves and have ruined public liberty. But they didn't do it alone. We helped. We allowed them. We allowed them when we allowed governments to act beyond the law and not hold them accountable. We allowed them when we allowed small groups to redefine our language, to push us in a certain direction, to make certain societal changes. See, the answer to this question of what words mean is not to shut up the other side. It's to stand fast on the actual meaning of the word. Again, one of the reasons why I eschew labels, people always ask me, am I a Republican, a Democrat, a progressive, a liberal, libertarian, a conservative? I don't fall into those. Because whatever I think those words mean, I'm pretty sure the other person doesn't think the same thing. We need to do the same. We need to do the same. That when someone charges insurrection or treason, I always go back to make sure, are we talking, are we using the same words? Do we mean the same thing? I'm sure some people think I sound like Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride. You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Without a common definition, language, well, it's like a boat adrift on the ocean, tossed to and fro by whatever forces happen to be in impact at the time. Tides, winds, currents, with no anchor point, no common understanding. And if we are riding in that boat, There's nothing to prevent us from hitting rocks or hitting a shoal because we have no control, because we have no anchor point. We have no method of navigation. Years ago when I used to fly, the most important thing about navigation was having fixed points of reference. I had a chart, I had a map that showed fixed points of reference by which we could navigate by. The English language used to be one of those fixed points of reference. We're losing that. We're losing that because we're allowing others to move those points of reference, and we don't stand up and challenge them. And in doing so, I think we've unwittingly not only lost the language, but the law, and by extension, our freedom. You know, John Jay said that every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country. But if we don't have a common understanding of those words, what good is that going to do you? So when you do read and study the Constitution, I hope you do. I hope you go back to our founding fathers, to their understanding of the words, to understand what that document means. Otherwise, it's just another piece of flotsam and jetsam floating around on the open seas of history. Now, if you found this an interesting program, a useful program, please share it. Let other people know. Weekdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they can hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. They can listen on our media players or our apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. They can also listen to the podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere they listen to podcasts. And if you do me a favor, have them subscribe and rate the program so others can find it. You can find all these links on AmericaOutloud.com, but don't just look at them, share them. Because when you do, you can help spread the blessings of liberty from sea to shining sea.